Who are the winners and losers from the Six Nations? Who's the dirtiest player our guys have played against? And which Irish players will definitely make the Lions squad? It's all coming up on The Hard Yards.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes, passionate about sport.
With fantastic support, half of Ireland were here. The rest of them are hopefully smiling at home.
We had a bet earlier in the year, €20, that if we won it, I wouldn't cry, but it's the best £20 I'll ever spend.
Here's Hayslip. Well, he picks it up quickly and off he goes. Drops it off to Hinshaw! Robbie Hinshaw scores it! Rugby history! Ireland beat the All Blacks for the first time!
Hello and welcome to episode 8 of The Hard Yards, the Sports Show Rugby podcast. I'm Andy McGeady. Joining me on the line is Paddy Wallace. Hello, Paddy.
Good morning, Andy. How are you?
I'm very well. And with me in studio, I have Sports Show Rugby reporter Pat McCarry.
Morning, all.
Kevin McLaughlin.
Hello, Andy.
And Ronan McGarra.
Hi, Andy.
We'll have Alex Donoghue from Ladbrokes in later to talk about their view of how many Irishmen will make the Lions squad and who's done most to help their cause during the Six Nations. But first, last night on Sports Show's Facebook Live, there was a question about the dirtiest player you've ever played against. Rog, we'll leave you out of this one for the moment. Kev, you're up.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think there were a few masters of the dark arts I had the pleasure of playing against and with. And one in particular who would stand out would be Nathan Hines, as I'm sure Rog remembers playing against him. He's one of those people you love having in your team, and Joe used to show clips of like these filthy, dirty, cheating things he'd do and kind of condone them in a strange way by kind of giving out to him but smiling at the same time. So all the young lads in the room be looking at Joe going, Jesus Christ, if I do that, he'll smile at me too, because Joe doesn't smile much in meetings. So Joe secretly loved it. I loved it playing with him. But then I remember we played Claremont in a doubleheader at Christmas the year after Hinesy left us. And perfectly honest, I got on really well with Hines. You know, I was thinking he's not gonna dick us here. He's gonna be real solid. You know, he's just gonna play a good hard game. And from the kickoff, I feel this knee in my lower back, and I turn around and see Hinesy smiling at me. I said, and then in the return fixture, I'll never forget it. Seeing I think it was about 75 minutes into the game, seeing Sexto chase Hinesy around the pitch in the middle of the game. I don't know what Hinesy had done to him at a ruck, but Johnny forgot about the game and chased him around the park. So he was an absolute master. But in terms of dirtiest player, there was a guy who played for Biarritz, a guy called the Viking. I can't even remember what his name was, a second row.
Lund, was it?
Lund. Yeah. With the big beard and the shaved head. I made the mistake of taking him on one game, and I tried a bit of a Hinesy on it, but I don't think I was ever a master of the dark art. So he was going to tackle someone from pillar, and I just gave his jersey a nudge. I just pulled him back a little bit. He turned around, winked at me, and elbowed me square in the nose and broke my nose. And it was the last time I ever took on the Viking. I never will again. I didn't do a Johnny now chasing around the park, but I refused to shake his hand after the game, so I feel like I won.
Paddy, do you have any of those? Do you have anyone you particularly remember their particular expertise?
Probably one teammate of mine stands out above all would be Robbie Kempson, the South African prop. He played about 3 years at Ulster under Alan Solomons. And again, one of those players that you liked having on your own team, but would have hated to be playing against. You'd have to have eyes in the back of your head. As Todai Kefi found out one time, whenever he got a flying elbow in the back of the head and caused him quite a severe neck injury. But yeah, Robbie was one of the nicest guys off the pitch. Very softly spoken, very much a gentleman. And but when he was on the pitch, he was an animal. He was filthy. I think I heard a story recently. Coming from the Bermuda Classic a couple of years ago, where the South Africans, who do take it very seriously, were playing the United States, and a similar incident to the one in Australia in Sydney, whenever he threw the flying elbow in the back of Todai Kefi after he had passed the ball. I think he did something similar to the United States out half. So anyway, that the game finished and everybody went their separate ways, but Robbie got a knock on his hotel door that evening, and it was the local police, and he was arrested for assault and didn't play any part, I think, in the rest of the tournament. So the rumour goes anyway, but yeah, Robbie he had a reputation of a bit of a killer on the pitch, gentleman off it, but certainly somebody you'd like on your own team.
There are some tournaments at which there are more cameras than others, and some playing years as well.
Yeah. I got a small piece of it there last week in the Legends game. It was great fun. A lot of old bodies running around the pitch trying to, you know, pretend they can still play. But it's still competitive now. The likes of Quinny and stuff.
So who are you talking about? Who got at you?
Well, I got knocked out in the first couple of minutes.
I thought it was non-contact.
Yeah, it sort of was, but I think I got my head in the wrong position. I was trying to tackle Chris Chesney stupidly, and I just sort of blanked out for a few seconds, and yeah, the old dodgy head reappeared. So I sat out for a few minutes and then came back on for most of the second half, first half again, and then just
it's good to see our former players are really respecting the new HIA protocols.
I didn't want to come off having only played a minute or two.
Down.
No, you were afraid you wouldn't get your share of points after the game if you didn't at least play half a game. Like, I think that's probably
that was actually one of the first things the doc said. Listen, I don't think you should.
You're grand, Paddy.
We'll come back to the HIA thing later on, I think, after last end. But Rod, you're not getting away with this one, so who?
You know what? I it's brilliant that Kev is there. I can I still have the kind of a lack of feeling in the right side of my right knee. Nathan Hines got me an absolute beaut of a stamp in Musgrave Park. I'll never forget it. The kind of timing and the, I think, the capacity of what he did that day has just stuck in my head, and it's over 10 years ago.
The level of medical expertise that he showed.
With a scalpel.
I was on the ground. He somehow kind of managed to kind of just get a running kind of stamp right into the knee where the you kind of lose power. And the knee was
on
never
the kick
the same.
And leg, of course. Like.
All calculated, without a shadow of a doubt, definitely. There was, he got me an absolute beaut. You know what I mean? But sometimes you just got to take your beating, you know?
I'm looking forward to getting Hinesy in to defend himself. Need to give a man a platform.
No, because this is it. Because I remember Johnny talking about Nathan Hines. He said he was very good friends with him in Dublin. Then the minute he went to the other side, he just became evil. And it's exactly what Kev has just summarised in the last 5 minutes.
There's the infamous one, isn't it? The Claremont Ulster game where you had three lads pinned in a ruck, and Ferris is one of them. And he was sitting on one lad and grabbing jerseys of the two other lads, and they're just trying to and it still got away. I think they got a try from it. He hauled three guys out in one single moment, and I suppose that was the great thing about him. Like a dirty guy, but he did it with reason sometimes as well.
He's a smart guy, and like Roger's saying, butter wouldn't melt when you're chatting to him off the park. Like, he's like gentle spoken, absolute hero and great to get on with, but like, just, he's smart. Like, he does what he needs to do to get a win, and coaches love him for it.
So we'll move on from sports supervillains. Ireland beat England. We are now the greatest team in the world. That's what we're going with here, really.
Yep.
It was funny, that turnaround from Ireland, Wales, everybody's down. Ireland beat England, everybody's up. Have we gone too far on both ends of this, Pat?
Yeah, like we kind of turned on them. Like, I was sitting in the Principality Stadium after the game and waiting for Joe Schmidt's press conference, and just you're on Twitter and you're just seeing the abuse coming in, and like, these guys are a bunch of frauds, and even getting messages from friends, what's up with these guys? I thought they were great. I thought they beat the All Blacks. And there's a lot of Irish fans who kind of just check in and check out every now and then. We're kind of like it's endearing and it's annoying that we're kind of a nation of bandwagoners as well. But I did see a couple of tweets going through, Schmidt out, and you're like, hold on a second now. Like, we're not exactly, like, you know, we're not playing great, but, you know, this guy's done some great things with us. And it went really over the top. But it was good to kind of see, like, the lads kind of having been around that and not too far removed from it, kind of thought there was a big performance coming. And as much as some people might have doubted that, you know, would come against England, it really did, and they impressed the hell out of me.
The defensive aspect of the performance was particularly interesting, like the centres. Going into the championship, would we have forecast that Gary Ringrose would have played every single minute Of every game, the only Irish player to do so. Kev, the centre defence was impressive.
Yeah, it was. I think Rog put out a tweet about, you know, the defence coach and deserving a point to Guinness, but I think for me it was the two centres who probably deserved 2 points. When you look at like Jonathan Joseph's performance against Scotland the week before and the way he just sliced through them at will, and like the English centres do good run good lines and they are smart in the way they play, but like for me, Henshaw was a star performer for Ireland for the tournament in terms of his consistency. Like people turn on him after that mistake he made against Wales, but he just plays so hard and so consistently. He's the type of guy you want to play with. And then come to Ringrose, just his level of consistency and playing every minute for his age in a tournament like that and playing to such a high level, I was incredibly impressed with him. I don't know if he gets enough credit. I don't know if people are talking about him enough. Rog, I know he's a Leinster man, so you're gonna be careful what you say here. But like, does comparisons made with Draco? Like, what do you think? Say Draco at his age, where was he? And like, are comparisons fair?
Well, even people beginning to make comparisons, I think that says everything about the young fella. I think there is definitely some similarities in their body shapes. I think in terms of their low centre of gravity. This is all ground, obviously. We've talked about this, but I think. He's really exciting, and I don't know, is it an Irish thing, but are people looking to find faults in him as opposed to, as you said, highlighting what he's really good at and what makes a difference? And as 13 is probably the hardest position to play in international rugby in terms of defending three attackers at each given time. You have to have such decision making capacities, and that'll come with experience too. I totally agree, but I think those two will go to a whole new level in another 20 tests. I think you know yourself. I think it takes a while to find yourself and get comfortable at that level and then start expressing yourself, because they seem like two really humble kids who kind of, obviously they have a, you know what I mean, a hard taskmaster inside them in terms of Johnny. I would say Johnny drives it hard. I'm probably pretty confident in saying that, but he also, I would think, encourages them, but they need to find their feet and start challenging Johnny a little bit as well, I would think, to get the best out of them. But yeah, the play in the minutes, I think it's even changing, because now even with the back subs, the 10 lads are, maybe with the exception of the scrum half, they're going to play, isn't it? Because you're just looking at the physicality and who's going to come in and fill in. But I think there has been every time his name is on the team sheet, and for a fella that young in it, like, let's be honest, there's a great choice in the centres for me, I think.
It's an interesting point on defending on 13. Like, I know how difficult it is, not that I play there, but I know from chatting to, say, the likes of Brendan Macken, who spent a huge amount of time trying to learn from Draco, because there's so much instinct involved. There's so many decisions, like you have to say, you have to make in like a split second. Do you bite in or do you push out? And like, Draco was a master of choosing when to come in and smash someone and when to stay out and go a bit softer and make sure that you can stay out for the ball out the back.
Yeah, exactly. And that's because I have debates now, because I'm obviously interested in it, but I always tell people to watch the ball. The 13 says to me, if I watch the ball, this guy's gone. So it's really interesting. They're saying sometimes you're there, could you not actually, if you watch the ball, you could have intercepted it though. But the movement of this guy, if he gets a half a metre on him at that level, you know what I mean? Because the speed of the pass will beat him.
Yeah.
Paddy, you're the resident centre in the conversation. What are your thoughts on this defensively?
I just said, defending as a centre becomes a lot easier the more familiar you are with your surroundings, as in your teammates. So with that access of sex and Henshaw has been fantastic, and a really strong unit for Ireland. And it was very apparent on the weekend that that intensity was right up there as high as it's ever been, I think, for an Irish team on the weekend, because every time England got the ball, they were just swarmed. Were in the play, and that's what, you know, they were starved of oxygen by the likes of Joseph, and the ball didn't seem to get out into those wide channels very often with, like, you know, two or three men on top of the ball, so it made it very hard for England to play. And that centre combination is maturing very, very nicely, and you know, could be a mainstay with that Irish team, and will only get better the more and more they play together.
Rod, you want to go back to something here? You talked about challenging Johnny, challenging the big players. How important is that for the younger guys in the squad? Because people forget that Henshaw is still young. Ringrose is very young. Where do they get the balls to challenge these guys?
I think it'll happen, and it'll. But you've got to earn that as well too. I think there's no point a fella coming in within 6 games start saying, well, no, this is the way I do it. No, you've got to earn that, you know what I mean? And you've got to earn that, not necessarily in games, but in training as well. There's an opportunity to grow in training, and I think the major advances I think that can happen in sport is in terms of preparation off the pitch. So how engaging are your team meetings, your back meetings? Does Gary have something to say but he doesn't want to say it, or he doesn't feel comfortable saying it? I can remember being an out half in Munster, starting off and in the dressing room and the pitch and meetings, I didn't speak, I'd say, for 2 years. You know, because you in front of you are all these superstars or fellas you look up to, and you're like, I'm actually here now, you know. But I think to get ownership, I think you need to have that. Johnny's probably not a great example, because I think one of his greatest strengths is his rugby knowledge and his capacity to analyse things, I think, superior to other people. But I think just in terms of Gary talking to Sean O'Brien, for example, it should be he should be very comfortable. But naturally it isn't for the young fellas. It's only when you become experienced, I think, that's, people ask, what's experience and why do you pick experience? But it's only till you're in that position. Experience for me is kind of doing the same exercise or the same skill application better the next time. I think I would think there's a very comfortable environment in Irish rugby in terms of young fellas being able to express themselves. And you look at the age profile of the team now, it's not as if it's a team of OAPs, you know. It's a really, really strong from 22 years on.
But what you're saying is there, because you mentioned Johnny's rugby knowledge as well, so the stature and knowledge. So Kev, I'll turn this over to you. Whether it's challenging one of the senior players or the coach, you need a combination of knowledge and a bit of your own stature as well. So I suppose that could go wrong if you don't have one of those.
Yeah, and I think what Rod said is spot on, in that you can't come in, play a couple of games and start, you know, barking your opinion all over the shop. You literally get no respect, and people will turn on you very quickly,
even if you're right.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those environments where you actually have to prove yourself through your actions, and 2 or 3 games and a few weeks of training sessions of you putting the head down and doing the right things and learning and listening, and then people will start to actually listen to you, and people will start to pay attention. But like, it's got to be actions first, talk second, and we've all played with a few of those guys that talk more than they do, and that's the last type of teammate you want. And I think Johnny, like, he talks a lot and he barks a lot and he demands high standards, but Jesus Christ, he gives it every time. And it's the same with the other leaders in the team, the likes of Pete. I mean, Pete doesn't talk a lot, but he leads by example. And to be perfectly honest, if you were to ask me, like, you need a combination of people that speak and of people that do. If everyone's speaking at the same time, you have an absolute rabble. And Joe will be looking at combinations like that, because if everyone's talking and training, it's an absolute mess.
Has there ever been, like, either you guys or even Paddy, like a moment where somebody has, maybe a young lad has come in just really confident in himself and actually has stepped up, and is there anything that stands out for you?
For me, it would have been Lukey Fitz. I'm sure you've seen it. Like, Lukey was, I'd say he was in the setup or in the change room 2 weeks, and he was challenging checks, like Michael Checa, and checks, like, I just remember the look of disbelief in his face seeing this guy who was, he'd just been taken out of the academy into a development contract in Leinster, and I think he played maybe 2 games against the Dragons and someone else, and I remember sticking him up in his hand and said, checks, actually, I don't agree with that at all. And everyone just goes, like, maybe Dricko and probably Shaggy might have been able to challenge checks, but like a 19 year old just out of the academy, wet behind the ears, challenging Michael Checa, it was hilarious actually to observe. And did you have anyone like that, Roger?
It's interesting that listening to that, because that, I think that's a big difference in terms of, I think maybe the self-confidence of a Munster player to a Leinster player at the time. But for me, it was really refreshing to see that in Irish camp when Luke came in, because it was like he was 100% convinced in A, his ability, and B, what he was talking about. And it was like he absolutely gave his point, and it didn't matter who he was talking to. If he wasn't in the team, didn't bother him. And I think that really developed our squad to kind of a place where there was a big value on people that weren't potentially in the team that week. And it was because there is a guy who can really convince you into his way of thinking. He's so powerful in terms of the message he delivers, and it was really interesting. I was sitting back and just going, my God, that
so it didn't
is...
piss you off? You felt
no,
refreshing,
it was
you?
The other. It was the other side. I was kind of going, I wish I was like that at times. I was like,
Raj, what about, I remember Keith Gleeson came into the squad and was very, very opinionated from a very early stage. And that could kind of rub people up the wrong way. I think more because, you know, he wasn't born bred in Munster or Leinster or Ulster, but came into an Irish squad and were kind of telling people how to do their jobs. So that sort of attitude, I think you've just got to take a wee bit of stock and know your environment a bit better, because I think it just players off a little bit.
I've been on the wrong end of a few lectures from Glee, so Jesus Christ. I remember I shared a hotel room with him in France, and like he's very particular in the way he likes to sleep in terms of no light, no noise. And he sat me down before we went to bed and gave me a 5-minute lecture on the rules. He was like, we have to cover every light, you can't move, don't squeak your bed, don't get up to the toilet during the night. And I was kind of looking at him going, really? Why couldn't we have to stay in this room? But I could see he's...
He was probably, I would say, in terms of professionalism, ahead of a lot of people in that current, in the setup of the Irish team at the time, Paddy. But it was definitely, in terms of how he delivered his message, it was like kind of go easy, you know what I mean? Just go easy there.
All right, we'll move on. Let's look back at the Six Nations. So, 5 rounds. Who are the big winners from an Irish point of view? Is Joe Smith, is the stock up or down after that tournament?
You're asking me?
Who's brave
enough to speak? I wouldn't say it's changed a huge amount. Like, I think from his perspective, from the Irish player's perspective, they know he's the right man. I think with him, the pendulum doesn't swing as far as it does for the media, because everything's terrible after the Wales and Scotland game. Everything's amazing after the France and England game. For them, they performed below par. They wanted to win the championship. They finished second. They beat England in a finished the championship on a real high. But they'll look back and they'll be incredibly critical of themselves. Like, Joe's not going to be celebrating this championship. Let's just be clear on that. He's going to be planning forward and planning on how we can go better. But I think what Roger's saying, in terms of the age profile of the team, it's really promising. Like, in terms of starting team, you got a lot of young guys. And then, say, like, for the likes of the older players like Bestie, you got guys like Niall Scannell now who are putting their hands up and putting pressure on him. And he's, what, 22, 23? I think we're in rude health for the next World Cup, to be perfectly honest, and Joe's building nicely towards that. And a lot of the older players now are feeling the heat, like Jamie's feeling the heat from younger guys and younger back rowers, and it's the same right across the board. And Joe's willing to make those calls. But one thing that kind of resonated with me that Dunner said a couple of weeks ago was that he could have used the squad a little bit better. And I think, like, the way he'd be looking at it is 5 games. That, you know, the same 15 should be able to play 5 games, and that's probably true. But I just thought the guys who came in at the weekend just added an energy, it added something different. People worried about Murray. I wasn't worried about Murray. England know exactly what Murray do. The fact is, Marmion brings something different, and they weren't ready for that. And that just changed it up. It changes the challenge. And Joe used to mix the team around a lot in Leinster, which made it hard for teams to play against us. In Ireland, he has to be a bit more conservative because there's less games. But I just thought Dunner's point of mixing up, bringing new players in and making it more difficult for the opposition to prepare for you, I thought it worked really well against England.
And Murray's an interesting example, because a lot of teams do play like a twin scrum half. They have a starter and then someone will come in. England do that every game, but Ireland don't do that with Conor Murray and Marmion. But Marmion was given the keys with Murray out, and then Luke McGrath is the guy who gets the experience, which for a lad of his age and lack of experience at the top level, I mean, that's invaluable in a cauldron like that.
Yeah, it is. And like, Murray deserves to play 80 minutes every game. He's that good. He's the best scrum half in Europe at the moment, and he's going to start for the Lions. And like, I can understand why Joe does it, but it just shows that, you know, bringing new faces in, trying new things, you need to be very brave to do it as a coach, but it can provide dividends.
So England will consider themselves kind of winners, but they set themselves a bigger target of a Grand Slam. They didn't achieve that. Raj, from the French perspective, are they winners?
In their eyes, yeah. I think they feel that they've created a group which was never there in the past four Six Nations campaign.
What do you mean by group?
I think they feel that they have kind of 30 players that want to play for each other, want to go to Marcosi, want to put on the blue jersey. In the past, that wasn't the case. It was more, how do I earn as much as possible from the club game? But now they can actually see that there's something hugely rewarding about playing test rugby for France. They are, I think, blessed with serious rugby players, but they have an awful lot of work in their infrastructure to improve going forward. It was a bizarre game at the weekend. They beat Scotland. They didn't look ever like beating Ireland or England, and easily put Italy away. But in terms of raw ingredients, they've so many good players to work with, but it's a case of how are they going to gel them together? They're getting a lot more time together, but it comes back to probably what Kev knows inside out in terms of the detail they're getting. There's a lot of general coaching going on, as opposed to, you can see, as we talked about, Ireland's defence against England. England are very good with the ball. There isn't much space in a game. People think 13-9 is probably a disappointing game, but it was a fascinating test match in the Aviva. Everything good about Six Nations rugby in terms of pressure, intensity, playing the conditions. And in France, I think they probably have to, they've kept their 9-10, I think, for five games in a row, first time in 5 years, which is an incredible statistic. So it's, I would say they're happy, but they realise they have an awful long way to go.
Okay. Paddy, from your point of view, are there any losers here? Especially in the Irish and the Irish setup.
Well, we'll be very disappointed with how they started the championship. I think the Scottish game would be a real disappointment for them. In terms of individuals, just looking at the last game, the injury to Jamie Heaslip, how far will that set him back going forward? But you see, the balance in the back row is. Seemed to be a better pairing of individuals, and Peter played out of his skin and was rightfully man of the match. From the weekend, I think the big positive would have been Peter's performance. But where does that leave Jamie now going forward? Because there were calls in some quarters to mix that back row up a bit. Looking through the team, and I'm just sort of looking through my Lions candidates. I mean, did anybody sort of go backwards in their?
Someone like Devin Toner, for example. I mean, there's a man who lost his place down to the bench and would have been seen as a key ingredient of the Joe game plan. He seems to perhaps have taken a bit of a knock.
Well, I mean, I thought Dominic Ryan played very, very well, especially in that last game. I think Henderson, lived up to his potential against England, and some may say that was a long time coming. But he's been picked for a long time as a potential Lion, and he showed that caliber of performance. So, I mean, it just shows that there is that strength and depth that Joe seems to be able to grow from the squad. He cultivates an environment where it's that next player up that are able to step up and fill that jersey, that whether it's Conor Murray being out with an injury and Kieran Mannion coming up in and settling in very well and playing very, very well on the weekend. It's that sort of squad mentality that Joe has created, and
players that are in an Irish squad come out of Six Nations better players for it.
The one thing I actually loved about O'Mahony coming back in was that it seemed to fire up O'Brien as well. That those two just kind of fed off each other's energy. I thought that the two of them were brilliant, and about the balance of that back row. It's interesting to see where the championship would have ended if they had went with that from the start. Like, O'Mahony was absolutely brilliant in the lineout, but he just brought so much kind of intensity to it as well, didn't he? Like, it's a nicer back row for me. Anyway, not saying too much against Jamie, but I like to look at that Irish back row.
It could be, and what we'll do now is we'll take a quick break and we'll come back to talk about potential Irish Lions, overall Lions, and whether someone like O'Mahony has put a late hand up for selection.
Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day. You can watch the start, fall off for 40 minutes, come back, see the end, perfect. You know what I mean? You've missed nothing, really. Remember, Raj, Kev and the Killiney used to have to bring two TVs into the room, one for you for Cheltenham. Like every red-blooded male in the country, he'd be watching the horse racing, whereas I'd have a TV for myself for things like Murder, She Wrote and Houses Under the Hammer. Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day.
The Hard Yards on Sports Joe, backed by Ladbrokes.
So we're Six Nations gone. Lions is ahead of us after the end of the club season, but who right now is on the plane from an Irish perspective, Kev?
You got to look at, if you're to look at the starting Lions 15 and who's right in the mix up for it, you got Best, Furlong, Stander is right in the mix. Shawnee, I would say, is in the mix as well. Murray and Sexton. Henshaw will be there, thereabouts. In terms of back three players, it's hard to know. I don't know whether Rog and Paddy have any opinions on that. Are there any Irish back three players in the mix up, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. For me, I think people forget it's the middle of winter in June in New Zealand. It's going to be greasy. It's going to be difficult conditions. Well, what I've experienced down there, it's usually not a pleasant place in June in New Zealand. So I think Stuart Hogg will definitely go as the first choice, 15. I think his game is, he's an electric pair. I just... the argument for bringing
is Rob Kearney going on this tour?
That's a good question.
I mean, he played brilliantly in Chicago, but up to that and maybe since that, it just hasn't been the Rob Kearney of old.
Well, I think there's a number of factors for that, and the fact that he finds it, or his body finds it, difficult to present itself fit every Monday. And Rob Kearney is 30 now, is he? And he's given so much.
He's 30 with a lot of miles on the clock as well.
Yeah, and like he's a powerful athlete too, as a really good footballer. But I think the decision for the selectors is to decide what emphasis they're going to put in fielding high balls. If they want people fielding high balls, I think that's really opens the bait and gives them a great chance of starting in Test games. But if you're looking at you know what I mean, probably a dry ball on a firm pitch with just the exuberance of youth, you go for Hogg all day. There's the other example in terms of 15. Will Zeebo go as the second 15? I think for me he has X factor. I think he's definitely on the plane. But then on the other side of it, I think you have statistically speaking, this was a great championship for Keith Earls in terms of line breaks, tries scored, defenders beaten. I just think he can play 12, 13, 11, 15, 14. I think you have to be, I would think, sharp in how you're building your squad in terms of how do you envisage this going, because they'll have mapped all these games and they'll know exactly how they want to approach these test games. So. Yeah.
We look forward to a Lions squad episode, I think. I think we can actually have an entire episode about that.
Yeah, we could.
But in the meantime, is after last weekend's performance, is Peter O'Mahony the greatest Irish flanker we've ever seen?
But Andy, you can't ask a question like that, because...
But the reaction seems to be that this is now... even the English media are going, wow, he's already on the plane.
Yeah, but that's typical because we hadn't seen him the whole championship. Yeah. He had a very good game, but I think he poached one ball in the air, which... he's expected to. Peter O'Mahony, as you know, is is a power athlete, so he excels in CMJ, and his capacity, I think, for power power output, so his capacity to kind of spring is incredible. His fitness is probably an area he needs to work on and get better at, because he does tire, but that will come, I think, with putting minutes behind him. He hasn't had a run. I think I heard Joel Schmidt talking about it was his first 80 minutes since the France game when he got injured, which is a long time ago. So there's a challenge in that too, in terms of bringing people on tours and about people who are durable. And I think he was an outsider before last weekend. I think all of a sudden now he's shot to prominence. But if you're being realistic and analysing it, I think he's thereabouts. The key game for him, I think, will be the game in Thomond Park against Toulouse. If he comes up with another man of a match performance there, timing is everything. He's going to be at least on the plane.
The captaincy thing, I mean, it's reared its head again. Is there anyone who's actually putting their hand up to be the captain of this tour and of this test team?
Dylan Hartley's put his hand down, if that answers your question, because he's not good enough. I don't know about his captaincy credentials. He's obviously strong, but I don't know what he's like. I haven't spoken to any of the English guys about him, but I think it's going to be Best or Alan Wynne-Jones.
And Alan Wynne-Jones is now out for, 6 weeks, I think they're saying?
I don't think that'll have an impact on it. I think Gats, he's going to pick him, and I think he'll probably pick him as captain. And, from a coach's perspective, they want a captain they know.
Yeah, as you said, the injury has no relevance.
No, he'll go on that tour and he'll probably go as captain.
But is it significant, the fact that they took the captaincy from Warburton? Warburton has started to perform very well.
He's back to being Sam Warburton.
Yeah.
What's he like, Rod? Yeah. Is he captain material? Or?
No. Exactly. But that's why it's so fascinating for us, I think, because we are spoiled with some. Well, for me, in terms of, O'Driscoll, O'Connell. It's everything you can ask for and more. The biggest, evidence of that was just someone like Martin Williams, who was, an unbelievable, good rugby player, but an even better person. And to go on a Lions tour, there's an awful lot more involved than the rugby side. It's about group harmony and actually buying into the project, because down there, if you don't buy in, it's going to be difficult enough, as we know. But if people start jumping ship and going away and looking after themselves, it's all over. And you really need such a strong character to gel the whole thing. And it's going to be survival of the toughest in terms of the mental capacity. And I think Eddie Jones came out and said maybe you select a captain from each of the countries.
But yeah, Paddy, is that kind of if that did happen, would that be kind of just sidestepping the issue here? Four country captains, is it going against the kind of ethos of actually having one person to pull together the group?
Yeah, 100%. I think. I mean, it's warming itself to cliques almost because each countryman will have their own leader essentially. It's very hard to guarantee a place as well. So whenever you're picking a captain, you want to be picking a captain who's more than likely to be starting in the starting 15. So, within an Lions squad, you're going to have a number of different captains from different countries and a number of different leaders and a number of different leaders of the pack. Johnny Sexton, for example, is a great leader within Ireland. Is he one of the first names on the team sheet at the moment? Probably. Is he captain material? I wouldn't rule it out either. But having no experience probably at that highest level, at international level, captaining, it might be a very bold move for Gatlin to give the responsibility to Johnny.
So, Paddy, gun to your head, who's your Lion captain?
Yeah. I would have to go with Alan Wynne-Jones at the moment.
Okay, Alan Wynne-Jones is one. Rog, your Lions captain, one name.
Can't give you a name.
No name yet?
No.
Okay. Kev?
I'll go Bestie.
Pat?
Alan Wynne-Jones, but I don't know if he's going to play every game, so Owen Farrell, I wouldn't mind if he captained the test team.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a thing about actually Sexton. He wouldn't be a bad shout either. I know in 2013 he was up with Jamie and he got the knock on the door from Declan Kidney and he didn't get the captaincy. And he spoke openly about this, being disappointed about it. So like, it is something that he'd love to do. I'd say he'd bloody revel in it as well, wouldn't he? But yeah, I wouldn't mind either them, Sexton or Farrell, to lead that test team.
Okay. We'll say goodbye to Paddy Wallace and we'll move on to the Pro 12 roundup and a bit of a look forward when we get back.
The Hard Yards on Sports Joe, backed by Ladbrokes.
Pat McCarry, looking ahead to the weekend's Pro 12.
Yeah, I was looking back at the fixtures there. I suppose everybody in the whole country just zones back in or on the Pro 12 now. And there's only 5 games left in the league campaign and things are getting tight enough now. And there seems to be 7 sides battling for those 6 positions. So, all of a sudden the heat is on and there's games now where people will start kind of coming back to the games. But, big points on offer this weekend. And you could see 3 sides winning. You've got Ulster playing Dragons. And then you have Zebre, our host in Munster as well. That's another game for Munster to kind of get back on track and get a win as well. So I'd see both of those sides winning that game, winning those games. And then what I'd kind of consider a gimme, and I don't know what you might say about this, but Leinster are home to Cardiff, and I've been at the RDS before where they've put big points up in Cardiff as well. Like, so you'd probably say that as well, Kev. That's a kind of not a handy win, but they should get the job done.
Yeah, traditionally playing Cardiff at home, you're thinking they'll come out hard, but if you're solid against them, they'll run out the gate. And I think Roger probably agreed with that. We just knew all we'd do was beat them up.
Roger's collapsed until after.
I got a fierce slagging about the lads say I don't play Pro 12, so I only just play for Ireland in the Heineken game. So I don't, they were there.
He hasn't played Cardiff since 1995, exactly.
I don't do those matches.
No, it's like John O'Gibbs used to say to us, like, we bash them for the first half an hour and they'll roll over and have their bellies tickled. Now, I think they've toughened up a bit since then, and they have a Kiwi coach who's a bit tougher on them. But I still think, Leinster will be disappointed if they don't win with a bonus point.
Connacht won't have it too easy this weekend.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say, that they're in massive, like, they've had crazy injuries all season again. And again, every report comes up is just like just a list of the wounded, and it comes out every Tuesday from Connacht. And I think Matt Healy's gone for another while. Kelleher's gone. He's had a great start to the season. It's a shame he hasn't been able to kick on. And then Boshoff has to go back to South Africa because his father passed away. So he was due to start as well for them. So absolutely riddled they are. And to go away to Glasgow, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't be expecting much out of them, but I don't know. I suppose what Roger kind of saying, you know, wouldn't have too much involvement with the Pro 12. But have you ever kind of been in a squad where it's had maybe over 50% of the squad being injured? Has it ever been that bad for you guys?
Jeez, I don't think so. No. I think the Connacht are obviously depleted, and Glasgow have to get points this weekend. That's the reality of it, because as you said, it's become compressed at the top. But Ulster finding form again, so. Yeah, it is a tough ask, and Glasgow are really, really good on that synthetic pitch.
Yeah, that's what I'd say, actually. I'd say Glasgow will win that comfortably, but then the other 3 Irish sides, I'd say, well, I'll get the win. So, yeah, should be a good weekend for the Irish sides.
We've got Alex Donoghue on the line. Alex, Pro 12 action, you're an Englishman who supports Wales. How are you feeling about rugby at the moment?
Pretty decent, actually. Yeah, I was about to say, when we were getting everything set up for this, everyone was getting ready to have a good laugh at me for last weekend, and I reminded everyone that despite my accent, I was actually raised in the valleys of South Wales, so I'll be the one having the laugh in the end. I'm feeling pretty decent, actually. I think it was a brilliant Six Nations. As a fan, it was a decent Six Nations. From a bookie's perspective, we saw loads of interest. The games are all pretty decent. And like I say, we've got a few decent club games to tick us over with until the Lions really is the main show in the summer. So, yeah, all systems firing in the world of rugby at the moment, for sure.
So, from your Ladbrokes perspective, what are your odds on the number of Irish players that would be in this Lions squad right now?
So, we've had a look at it yesterday. At the moment, we think it's going to be around 4 or 5. So, we're saying we're saying 5 or more players is odds on at 1 to 2.
Is that
six or more players is 13 to 8. So we think it's going to be 4 or 5 players that will start the first test. Pardon me. We think it's going to be, in terms of making a squad, even more than that. We've actually got some individual odds on the players to start the first test. So according to the Ladbrokes odds this morning, the most likely Irishman to start the first test, Ty Furlong, odds on at 1 to 4. CJ Stander, long odds on at 1-10. Rory Best, it's a coin toss whether we think he's going to start the first test or not. It's basically 5-6 each of two. Then we've got some of the outsiders, Connor Murray, and he looks like to start the first test. Sean O'Brien, 4-1, and then Jody Sexton odds on as well. So the main men are in there. And there's another interesting bet. I wonder what the lads' opinion of this is. Rory Best to be the captain, 2-1, a bit of an outsider, but our rugby boys at the head office gave him a tiny squeak of being captain if Sam Warburton didn't get the gig.
So Stander is 10-1 on to start the first test.
Yeah, looking like an absolute certainty. 10-1 on, 6-1 not to, 10-1 on to start the first.
Ladbrokes are picking the team, are they? Absolute certainty. That's work for Ladbrokes, is it? Oh, yeah.
How do you see the breakdown across the four nations then?
In terms of who's going to have the most? I mean,
in that regard,
that's one we haven't really got around to yet. I tell you one I will give you though that's interesting. Dylan Hartley, by no means certainty to make the lines. Actually, we make him odds on 8-15, but he's just 6-4 not to make the squad. I know there are lots of people over on this side that were pretty disappointed, but it looks like Gatland doesn't really buy into England's success, certainly in terms of individuals. And like I say, we have a feeling that Dylan Hartley is by no means a shoo-in to even make the lines, which I think a lot of people might find a bit of a surprise.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Just before we go, Rog, it's been another funny week in Paris where rugby is concerned.
Yeah, it sure has. It's been, this has been, I suppose, a lot more serious than other weeks. We've had an awful lot of, I suppose, events this season.
So in summary, the merger's off.
The merger's finished, yeah. Nothing has changed from Racing's point of view. Stade's point of view is slightly different. I think their owner wants out and has been seeking to sell the rugby club for a number of years, and he's failed. But I think he's given an ultimatum that he's gone within the next 3 months, which leaves them in a very challenging position.
So if you want to buy a rugby club... There's one going, and if you hit your bets, yeah. Right, time to wrap it up. Ronan Nagara, thank you very much. Thank you, Kevin McLaughlin. Thank you, Pat McCarry. Thank you, Paddy Wallace. Thank you, Alex Donoghue from Ladbrokes. Joe Harrington is our producer, and Shane Dempsey is on sound. Get in touch by tweeting any of us or at sportsjoe.ie, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or through your favourite podcasting app. This has been The Hard Yards. I am Andy McGeady. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.
The Hard Yards on Sports Joe, backed by Ladbrokes.